BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Excuse me. Why are you tearing down the posters? Yeah, it's pretty fucked up that you're doing this.
It's pretty fucked up that you ain't educated.
No, I'm pretty educated, man. I'm from Israel. I know exactly what's going on over
you're
there.
From there? Oh,
yeah.
I'm watching a 90-second video posted on X. It was first uploaded in November 2023, and it appears to show a young person standing in front of a lamppost on a street in New York City. They are removing posters with pictures of some of the hostages taken by Hamas in Israel on the 7th of October. It's weeks after the attacks happened, and Israel has begun its bombardment of Gaza. The man speaking is filming on his phone.
Hey, do me a favor, man. What's your name?
Do me a favor.
What's your name?
Go fuck yourself.
That's not a name.
At this point, a second person comes into the frame and stands by their side. She says something to the first person. It's pretty much inaudible. But then she also begins removing the posters.
Oh, you too?
Thank you.
All right, listen, say hello. Your face is going to be on the internet.
Yeah, it is.
No, it is.
Track me.
Her
track
too.
Me. I fucking dare you.
I have no reason to track you. I just want people to see what the face of anti-Semitism looks like.
What none of the people in the video knew at the time was that it would go viral.
Don't say hello to the world.
And the world would see it.
Well, the world sees you anyway.
So what can videos like this tell us about the way highly emotive debates become toxic online? In this series, I'm investigating the online phenomena that provide the backdrop for the upcoming US presidential election. I'm travelling to New York to meet people who've been affected by a tactic called doxing. When someone is doxed, their personal details are shared online, which triggers other social media users to personally attack or shame the subject to make a bigger point. The people I've tracked down have received extraordinary levels of hate, which seems to have affected each of their own views in different but significant ways. I'm speaking to them because of their experiences, not because they represent all perspectives on the war in the Middle East. Some of the things you'll hear could be distressing. I'm Mariana Spring, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Why Do You Hate Me, USA? Episode 4, Doxed and Blocked. The video of the people pulling down the posters outside the park went viral roughly a month after the 7th of October attacks. It was just one of many posts that revealed the intense political tension at the time. The impact of the Hamas attacks was felt across New York, including on university campuses.
I remember my phone started blowing up with red alerts, which is an app. Every time a rocket lands or is fired into Israel, you get an alert.
This is Eden. She's a senior at Columbia University, studying Middle East studies, Jewish studies, and political science. On October the 7th, when Hamas gunmen killed about 1,200 people, taking around 250 more hostage, Eden and her college mates were having a typical week.
That Friday, actually, I had gone to Shabbat dinner, and so we were at a friend's apartment, like, playing cards and playing board games. It was typical to maybe get, you know, a handful of alerts every now and then. But hundreds of red alerts started going off, and we were all so confused because we hadn't seen any of the footage yet. But we kind of just shrugged it off. And then I got home, and a friend of mine sent me a video of a corpse being dragged through the streets.
Eden is 21 years old. Her hair is pulled back in a bun, and she's wearing gold earrings. She's the president of Students Supporting Israel Club at Columbia.
That morning, I went straight into planning. We planned a vigil for that evening, and a number of students came, and I think everyone was just in shock. And at that point, a lot of us, myself included, were still waiting to hear back from loved ones in Israel. A lot of people were missing. We didn't know if they had been kidnapped, killed. No clue. My friends and I went to go meet on campus so that we could take the subway downtown for a solidarity gathering. And I remember we saw a gathering of students in the middle of campus with Palestinian flags, making signs saying, "Free Palestine, resistance is justified, from the river to the sea." And of course, there's nothing inherently wrong with carrying a Palestinian flag, but at that point, Israel hadn't responded militarily. The bodies of our loved ones were either missing or still warm.
For Eden, it's her Jewish upbringing and faith that has given her a strong connection to Israel. Before moving to New York, she lived in Los Angeles, California.
My parents fled religious persecution and rising authoritarianism in Iran when the revolution broke out, and they were just kids. But the stories of my relatives fleeing that persecution and sacrificing really everything so that me and my sisters could have the life that we have now is something that really informed the way that we were all raised.
In the weeks after the attacks, I remember seeing lots of videos of people pulling down the hostage posters in cities around the world. Some of those people were students. The one outside the park in New York stood out to me because it triggered an extraordinary wave of hate. The posters themselves were originally made by artists based in New York, each one with a photograph of the missing person under the red and white banner, "Kidnapped." They said the aim was to ensure that the Israeli hostages were not forgotten. After the attacks, Israel responded militarily. As the number of civilian deaths in Gaza was rising, the protests on college campuses in support of the Palestinian people were gathering momentum. Many of the people there were peacefully demonstrating against the violence and killing, and to draw attention to the historical context of the war. For Eden, though, she felt targeted by some of the protests.
So it felt like you would be on campus and you would see protests calling for the removal of Zionists. And then you would walk off campus and you would see people tearing down posters of hostages and writing it off as propaganda.
When did you start to experience online abuse?
It started in the winter. So in December, I did an interview, and the clip of the interview was very, very brief. It was just a few seconds.
She told us students on all sides of the issue feel unease on campus.
It's tense. It's hostile. There have been days where I've had to walk through not one but two protests on campus in order to get to my classes.
And immediately I received hundreds of messages, of comments, of DMs online mocking me. And most of those were from people I didn't know online. But there were a number of them that came from my peers. And I think that that was acutely painful.
Eden appeared on 60 Minutes, broadcast to CBS's Current Affairs show, to stand up for herself and other Jewish people who she says felt unsafe on campus. She says she thought it might spark some backlash, but she didn't expect people to share her personal information online and to send her extreme anti-Semitism and misogyny. In other words, she had been doxxed.
People had posted links to it and screenshots of it that included my face and my name, saying, "F her, she's supporting genocide, Hitler was right, Hitler should have finished all of you off, stop supporting apartheid, go die, I hope you burn in hell." And this is a reaction to me speaking out about the anti-Semitism that I've experienced.
By April 2024, the civilian death toll in Gaza was continuing to rise into the tens of thousands, and the pro-Palestinian campus protests at Columbia had evolved into an encampment. Some students were campaigning for a ceasefire and demanding the university divest its finances from companies and institutions they claimed profit from Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories. There were students involved posting online in support of Palestinian people who did so without any abuse. But some of the rhetoric I've seen on posters and in videos was anti-Semitic. Eden says she stopped going to campus after she felt physically intimidated and her personal information was shared online. Since then, she's been posting more frequently on social media about Israel and in opposition to some pro-Palestinian protests. Several pro-Israeli groups also now post more often, including advocating for Israel's right to self-defense. Eden, in her role as president of the Student Supporting Israel Club, was also organizing protests on campus.
When it comes to people commenting who just disagree with you or want to support Palestinian people who are shocked and horrified by some of the images they're seeing unfolding in Gaza, the war in Gaza in particular, what would be your response?
You know, I'm not talking about the conflict. I'm not talking about the war. I'm not really talking about Israelis or Palestinians. And I understand that people are hurting. I see the images coming out of Gaza. The sight of any innocent human being that has gone through war should break all of our hearts as human beings. When I'm talking about the anti-Semitism and the hatred that I've experienced as an American Jew on my American college campus, and I'm held responsible for the actions of the Israeli government, it's actually incredibly harmful to hold American Jews, diaspora Jews, and even Israelis accountable for the actions of a government. Many of them disagree with the actions of the government. Many of them agree with the actions of the government, but none of them are responsible for those actions.
Eden is taking legal action against Columbia University because she says they failed to keep her and other Jewish students safe on campus and accuses them of discriminatory behaviour. I contacted Columbia University, who declined to comment pending legal action. The university has policies to address all forms of discrimination, including in relation to social media posts, flyers, or hostile environments on campus. Doxing is a tactic deployed online all over the world, and I've received messages from dozens of people affected by it, many who have never had a public profile at all. It turns out one of the people in the video I was watching at the start, the one with the posters, has also been doxed. I tracked her down and she agrees to meet me at the park near where it was filmed.
Washington Park. You'll always see something interesting here.
Her name is Lita. She's a musician and audiovisual artist studying at New York University, which is one of the other colleges based in the city not far from Columbia. I asked her to tell me what happened that morning.
I was half asleep. I was on my way to class. And yeah, it was just an ordinary day in New York. And I saw this man that was harassing and verbally harassing a woman. Something in that moment just did not feel right. And it was obviously a very, like, queer trans woman. So I asked her, like, hey, are you okay? And I saw that she was ripping down posters. And obviously, when you know what happens to trans women, and she was, like, she was a brown woman. So it's like, I was not going to leave her isolated. So I understood what it also meant to rip down those flyers, and I wasn't going to leave her alone. So in a moment of solidarity, I decided to do it with her too.
Lita says her main concern was the safety of this person because she knows of others being discriminated against because of their identity in this area of New York. She says this was the first time she'd become involved in the wider debate around the war in Gaza, but that she was aware the act of pulling down the posters was provocative. Lita is an Ecuadorian American born in New York City. She went to high school in Texas. One of the ways she found a community after coming back to New York for college was through DJing.
I came here with like 3 suitcases. And I was like alone, and music has always been so comforting to me. Like, so I got like a small controller and I started just like learning the basics of DJing, and I was like, you know what, maybe I am good at this. And I'm pretty lucky to be part of the queer community as well. So I think there's a big intersection between queer identity and dance music.
After she had been filmed, Lita went to class and the rest of the day was unremarkable. But it was the next day she realized something was going on.
I'm walking my dog with my roommate, and we got, like, smoothies, like, we're feeling good, we're just, like, the sun was out, like, we're feeling good. I get on my Instagram, and that was it. Like, immediately, like, there was nothing but, like, Israeli flags and everything. I gave my phone to my roommate, and I was like, I need you to figure out how to make my Instagram private. Like, I literally cannot.
Several large accounts shared the video across different social media sites, accusing her of anti-Semitism and sharing her name and other personal details. It triggered a deluge of abusive comments directed at Lita. I've looked through some of them and found dozens are extremely misogynistic and racist.
And I believe in like less than 4 hours it already had like 40,000 likes. It was already shared thousands of times, and I had a lot of death and rape threats in my inbox. When people are like, I'm going to find you and your family. I'm going to disgrace you. You're never going to work again. Emailing like different gigs that I had, like they were reaching out to friends, to family, like I had zero control.
When it came to like the really nasty threats and the abuse, like what was your way of coping with it?
My body immediately went to like to disassociating, you know, and like as a DJ, my location is out, you know, so like when people are like, I'm going to kill you, you take those things seriously. I couldn't take any gigs, just mainly because like you hear what happened at the Pulse nightclub in Florida, right, where someone came in a queer club and shot people, and that idea was very real in my head that I was going to get shot like while DJing.
Lita says she didn't feel supported by her university either. The video wasn't filmed on campus and she hadn't posted it herself. She says NYU accused her of harassment and vandalism and banned her from using university facilities. They also barred her from her graduation ceremony. I contacted NYU about what Lita told me. They didn't reply. Looking at their website, the university has policies that prohibit discrimination.
How do you respond to, like, when someone says to you, well, I don't agree with this, I don't like you tearing down the posters, you know, I'm worried about Israeli civilians, or, like, this is anti-Semitic, or I don't agree with you?
I think, obviously, people are like, well, this is a life, right? But, like, what about the Palestinian prisoners right now, right? You know, and I think for a long time, I struggled with that question, like, why did I help, you know, especially when, like, I had thousands of people calling me anti-Semitic. For a while, I'm like, why did I do it? Am I anti-Semitic? You know, like, I think everyone should step in for trans women.
Lita says her decision to rip down the posters of the hostages was motivated by what she viewed as allyship with a trans person. But it was also driven by her anger at the actions of the Israeli government in Gaza. That doesn't change the distress this kind of video caused, including for hostages' families.
Why do you think people reacted so strongly to the video?
I think people reacted strongly to the video because people were leveraging hostage flyers over Palestinian lives. What's really important for me is for people to understand that this didn't start in October 7th. And if there's anything I just want people to take from this is to, like, educate themselves, like, actually educate themselves and not just believe things that they are taught. Like, I don't want to see pregnant, you know, mothers who are giving birth with zero anesthesia. Like, the fact that that's still not moving people to call at least for a ceasefire is just insane to me. Go online and see what's happening right now, because, like, this has got to end.
Lita says she's been horrified by images and videos appearing on her social media feed which show people, including children, having been killed in Gaza by Israeli forces. The more she views this kind of content, the more she gets recommended it. She's also been exposed to some ideologies she hadn't subscribed to before. When I look back on Lita's accounts over the past year, I notice she posts gradually more about the war and has shared posts in support of armed resistance. Several groups that are part of the broader pro-Palestinian student movement in New York support liberation, including by force.
Before that day when the clip was filmed of you by the park,
were you kind of involved in the pro-Palestinian movement on the social media before that point? Or was that kind of like your entry point?
No, that was the entry point. And I think that was a moment that I got radicalized in the best way possible. And like, I don't want people to take it out of context, like radicalize as a bad thing. But it made me understand that liberation is a lifetime, is lifetime's work.
What role do you think social media has played in motivating the pro-Palestinian movement on social media?
Yeah, I think it's like solidified us even deeper to continue that work. You can see the disproportionate between the casualties right now in Gaza and in Israel, right? When you really see people's lives in the refugee camps, like there's people actively losing lives, losing limbs. Yeah.
Felita, being doxxed was her entry point to her becoming involved in pro-Palestinian activism. And now she calls for a free Palestine and shares posts supporting resistance. For Eden, being doxxed made her feel the need to further defend herself and her identity. She posts more frequently in support of Israel and to raise awareness of anti-Semitism. They both post things online that some people object to, but they say they don't send abusive messages and they weren't the ones doxxing each other. So where is the trolling coming from? I tracked down several of the people behind accounts that targeted Eden. Some of the profiles were based in Borneo and Malaysia. One anonymous account, which shared false claims about her and her family, was dedicated to targeting Jewish college students in the United States. The accounts that have been targeting Lita are varied too. I decided to try and speak to some of these people. There was only one who agreed to talk to me, a man called Bernie. He wasn't the person who had doxxed Lita, but he had directed abuse at her.
Hi, my name is Bernard. I live in central New Jersey.
Bernie spent a lot of time online reading about what was happening on the university campuses and also the act of pulling posters down.
It was personally upsetting because in one instance, a girl was pulling down these posters, and perhaps instead of putting counter posters up, such as children being killed in Gaza, which would have been perfectly understandable and acceptable, she was smiling and pulling down the posters as if these hostages perhaps did not even exist, or at least that was the initial impression that they were giving.
Why did it offend you personally?
Well, I am Jewish. My mother, who was a Holocaust survivor, also had bouts with schizophrenia. She would be in her own world, more or less.
Bernie saw in the video something that reminded him of a really difficult experience from when he was a student decades ago.
And I never experienced anti-Semitism, at least until one time I went down to a local bar. There was a man next to me. And maybe it was the shape of my nose or something, but I do remember him asking me, "Are you Jewish?" And I said, "Yeah." And I received a quick kick in the shin, and he turned back to his drink. It left an indelible effect on me in some way. All I know is that there was suddenly a sense of insecurity. When I read the news, it affects me because I wonder if somebody's going to do something to me.
I'm sorry you experienced that, because that's not an easy thing. To come back to that video and that post, you'd commented underneath and you seemed, I could sense from your comment that you were angry.
In one instance, I wasn't very complimentary about how they looked.
You basically said that you described these poster girls as having ridiculous crooked smiles, looking ugly, using sort of not very nice language about them.
It was an emotional response, a spontaneous response to what I was watching. And I was so upset by it, by the hate that I think I was observing, that I simply decided to shoot something off, a comment that was as equally hateful, but I regret it.
The way information is shared on social media can strip it of context and nuance. Most of us just want to uphold or defend what we think is right. It's just that social media can stop us from understanding another's point of view. And it seems doxing is a tactic that is a product of this kind of polarization. And it also feeds it. A kind of vicious cycle. Lita's life has changed since that moment. But now she's back to gigging.
You know, anytime I DJ now, I always talk about, obviously, about Palestine.
What's the kind of main lesson that you take away from all of this?
That fighting for liberation will cost you something. And that it's an uncomfortable job. You know, like, you literally don't know when you're going to be a victim of doxing or just, like, insane, like, social media hate. It is scary, but you meet people. And, like, I would not even be here, even alive, sharing this if it wasn't for, like, my community.
How is Eden feeling about the whole experience?
It feels so insignificant in some ways to put attention on the online hate. But I think I realized that it's important because when we allow people to feel so empowered in such immense hate, we're allowing the actions that are inspired by that rhetoric to become mainstream and normalized.
I can see how doxing has a personal cost, and it damages the health of the conversation. This, as well as the posts about the war in the Middle East being shared all over some people's social media feeds, could inform how they vote in the upcoming US election. That includes Lita. She'll be voting for independent candidate Jill Stein instead of Democrat Kamala Harris. After all of this, Eden says she doesn't know who to vote for. The tactic of doxing seems to be a result of some people becoming increasingly immersed in their own echo chambers online, due, in part, to the site's algorithms. The major social media companies have all made commitments to deal with hate and disinformation about the war. This comes back to how their algorithms seem to favour engagement over all else. This collective identity, though, can provide a real sense of belonging and shared purpose. When looking through lots of the accounts posting in support of Palestinian people, I start to notice another common thread. Quite a few of those with Palestinian flags in their bios are also fans of megastar Taylor Swift.
So we're Swifties for Kamala. You know, Taylor and her music have literally taught us to speak now and be fearless, and that's what's happening.
On the next episode of BBC Radio 4's Why Do You Hate Me, USA, I find myself in the labyrinth world of the Taylor Swift fans, or Swifties, to try and understand the power of the celebrity fandom.
Hello, I'm Amal Rajan.
And I'm Nick Robinson, and from BBC Radio 4, this is the Today Podcast.
And Nick, this is the moment to ask you what you most enjoy about spending a couple of hours in my company each week.
Well, that would be enough in itself, but the fun is to go in depth on a story with an expert guest, and for you and I to try and really get what's going on.
I have CCTV on my home. I've had people rip my gates down.
Is it worth it, Andrew, being an MP?
On no occasion
did they know.
Did the scan that I'd had ever appear in the other hospital.
So what do you enjoy most about doing?
I love the fact that we've got a really strong sense of community. And yes, I love some of our star guests too.
Frank Skinner! Way! This is where we need pinned applause.
I'm going to clap as well, just to thicken it up.
Listen and subscribe on BBC Sounds.